word of mouth. Word of mouth. Word of mouth.
Elementary, my dear Watson.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott.
And Van Coon was left-handed.
Left-handed?
I'm amazed you didn't notice. All you have to do is look around this flat. Coffee table on the left-hand side, coffee mug handle pointing to the left. Power sockets, habitually use the ones on the left. Pen and paper on the left-hand side of the phone because he picked it up with his right and took down messages with his left. You want me to go on?
No, I think you've covered
it. I might as well. I'm almost at the bottom of the list. There's a knife on the breadboard with butter on the right side.
Sherlock Holmes is everywhere these days. There's the blockbuster franchise starring Robert Downey Jr. and two hit TV shows set in the present. CBS's Elementary and Sherlock from the BBC. Enthusiasm for the fictional detective is hardly new. When Sir Arthur Conan Doyle killed off Sherlock Holmes in an 1893 issue of Strand magazine, 20,000 readers canceled their subscriptions. Many on the streets were said to have worn black armbands in mourning. Doyle succumbed and revived the character in dozens more stories before his own death in 1930. The appeal of Sherlock Holmes coincided with the rise of popular science in the late Victorian era. Today's Sherlock mania may be connected to a more 21st century concept, mindfulness. It is Holmes' ability to observe and reflect that make him an extraordinary character, and maybe even model. Psychologist and science columnist Maria Konnikova considers the detective as guide to upgrading the mind in her new book, Mastermind, How to Think Like Sherlock Holmes. And Maria is with us from Argo Studios in New York City. Welcome to Word of Mouth.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Sherlock Holmes is best known for these powers of deduction, to notice the relevant clues and filter out the useless ones in a moment of observation. How do you characterize the way that he thinks?
I think that mindfulness really does go a long way towards describing what it is that Holmes is doing. What I mean by mindfulness is the cognitive psychological concept of learning to be present in the moment in your own mind and being able to resist the distractions that inevitably will arise. Mindfulness doesn't mean that your mind doesn't wander, that it doesn't get distracted. What it means is you're able to catch it. You're so aware of both the external environment and your thoughts that you realize when you're drifting and you're able to say goodbye to that distraction and bring yourself back to the moment. So when Holmes tells Watson that the difference between the two of them is that Watson just sees, whereas Holmes both sees and observes, that's what he's really getting at.
So when Holmes is there sitting in his armchair, smoking his pipe, there's something more going on.
Absolutely. That's the moment where he's really letting everything percolate in his mind. He's giving himself the mind space to think. I think in the 21st century especially, but this was always true, we have a tendency to just go from thing to thing. We're always on the go. We're busy. We do one thing, we do another, and we think that every single break is something that is making us less productive. What Holmes understands is that in those breaks lies the secret to real productivity.
This is the time when he wanders, and I guess what the metaphor that he uses is the brain attic. This kind of concept of an infinite space to sift through and choose what to let go of and what to store. I wonder if that 19th century image compares to our contemporary understanding of the brain and how it works.
I think it's a very apt image if you don't take it quite literally, in the sense that our brain attic is much more capable of change than a real physical attic. You know, if you're going to rebuild a physical attic, you need to destroy the old one. It's a very complicated process. Our brains are much more flexible. They're much more elastic. So our brain attic can expand. It can contract. We have much more control over what happens with it. But that aside, it's a remarkably good way of thinking about how we make memories, how we store memories, how we then encode those memories, and how we will eventually access the memories that we've stored in the attic. So Holmes tells Watson that it's a foolish man who just lets any sort of lumber into his attic, that treats it kind of like a junkyard. You know, you're flea market shopping and you just throw whatever up there because, you know, who knows, maybe you'll need it one day. And eventually you come up there and you realize, whoa, there's no more room. And I have no idea what's up here, and I don't know where anything is. What Holmes suggests that Watson do instead is to be incredibly selective about what goes into his attic. So in terms of memory, think about what it is you're encoding and why you're encoding it. And if you think that it's important enough to remember, make sure that you are labeling those boxes properly. Make sure that you're cross-referencing it as much as possible with what you already have in your attic. Because the more tags that we have for a memory, the more likely it is that we'll be able to access it in the future.
Well, I have to admit that, first of all, I think what I fight is thinking a lot more like Watson. He's quick to judge. He reacts to his own erroneous conclusions. It takes a measure of discipline to sort of step back and not block new information by pretending that you know what the answer is going to be. Is this a discipline? Is something? This is a muscle that we can work on?
Yes, I think that's a great way of looking at it. What Holmes does definitely takes effort, especially for a novice. It's like with anything, with any new skill. You know, if you remember when you first learned to drive a car, for instance, it was very difficult at first. You had so many different things that you had to keep in mind. You needed to remember how to look. You needed to remember where to place your hands. You needed to remember the proper thumb position, this and that. And everything was an effort. And at some point, it just clicked. And it's probably difficult for you to remember how hard it once was. It's similar with that deliberate nature of Holmesian thought. If you're not used to it, it's going to take a tremendous amount of mental skill to do that. Holmes is at the point where it's become mechanic, it's become more automated, more like driving a car for many, many years. But I will caveat that with one thing. Watson makes him remember just how difficult it once was, because he has to explain all of the steps to Watson. When he does that, I think he actually improves. So I think the Holmes at the beginning of the Conan Doyle stories is inferior mentally to the Holmes at the end. Even Holmes has room to grow. When you're an expert, you often reach this kind of plateau where everything is so second nature that you start taking it for granted. Watson is the key to ensuring that Holmes never takes it for granted.
We're talking about learning to think more like Sherlock Holmes, which is the subject of a new book written by our guest, Maria Konnikova. She's a psychologist and a columnist for Scientific American, Slate, and other publications. Well, I want to go back to that sort of idea of the brain attic, because we all have these spaces in our minds, but you talk about things getting put up there or that we put up there. It feels to me like there are so many inputs in our lives right now that it's hard not to have things sort of pushed into our attic, you know, shoved into those corners and crannies, whether boxed up neatly or not.
It is incredibly difficult. And here, I think we're lucky that it's not a physical attic, that it is something that is much more elastic. Even though a lot of our intake of information does occur on this more involuntary level, our brain is much smarter than we think, or at least much smarter than I think, in the sense that it really knows your mind. It knows what is and isn't important to you because you've trained it over time about things that arouse your attention, things that don't matter that much. What is it that piques your curiosity and your interest? Chances are these are the things that it then starts storing without your notice. And so if you decide one day that, you know what, I'd like a little bit less celebrity gossip in there, maybe the reason the celebrity gossip is in there is because it intrigues you. And who am I to blame you? It intrigues me as well. So it's something that we need to work hard at. We need to retrain our brain to say, hey, brain, these are the things that are interesting to me. And that way it can take some of that work away from us.
What role then does trusting of the gut, the instinct, the feelings that lead us to make conclusions? Is it possible to separate objective details from those that we attach values or feelings to?
It is possible, but it's incredibly difficult. Let me start off by saying that we can't tell apart good intuitions from bad intuitions. So we have no idea when something is right and wrong. It will feel equally right to us. So that part we're really bad at. What we can do is realize that intuitions are likely only valid if we have expertise to back them up. So Holmes is an expert at people perception. He is an expert at being able to see someone and tell right away their history, what they're thinking, what they're feeling, what they're doing. And this is something that he's built up over thousands of hours, over case after case after case, and interaction after interaction after interaction. And so he can judge his instincts there. They are accurate because they're based on real knowledge and real expertise. if he suddenly had an instinct about, I don't know, a gemstone or something that he had no interest in, and I'm probably just made a mistake that Sherlockians will prod me for, because he probably does know. Exactly, because he probably does know about gemstones. He knows about everything because he's a fictional character with a voracious mind and curiosity. So let's imagine he knows nothing about gemstones. If he made a snap judgment about that and it wasn't based on that expertise, he shouldn't trust it, even if it seems just as worthy of trust as his judgments about people.
Well, I'm wondering if you think he'd be a nice person. I mean, he's certainly smart and worth admiring, but you know, he doesn't sound like somebody who goes with the feeling very often. Would you like to, I don't know, cuddle up next to Sherlock Holmes, Maria?
Well, you know, I think Sherlock Holmes has much more depth of emotion than we give him credit for. He does have all these feelings. He's just very good at controlling them. He lets them show for Watson numerous times. That heart is there. It's not that he's cold. It's that he doesn't let his emotion cloud his reason.
I see here, I read in your book, that Holmes was not a multitasker. He really focused on one thing at a time. What I'm hearing from you, Maria, is attentiveness, mindfulness, you know, taking that moment to sit and reflect and play the violin, restraining the ego by not pretending you know what's going on. I'm wondering if you're writing an introduction to Buddhism stealthily cloaked in Sherlock Holmes' houndstooth.
I don't think so, because so many of the things that Sherlock Holmes does are not central to Buddhist thought. This particular element is taken from Buddhism and from a lot of other spiritual traditions, but he's doing it for a very different purpose. He's not doing it for this sort of deeper spirituality. Instead, he's doing it to be sharper, to be better able to solve problems, to be more creative, to be more aware of the world, but in order to interact with it, not in order to recede from it. So I think that there are important differences between the two, while that core principle of mindfulness is certainly shared.
Mm-hmm. Well, plenty of lessons. Maria Konnikova, I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Maria Konnikova, psychologist and a columnist and author of the book Mastermind, How to Think Like Sherlock Holmes. You can find much more on the book and on the enduring allure of Sherlock Holmes on our Facebook page, Word of Mouth Radio.